This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
See, I'm getting better at like identifying when I trip over my words, stopping, and then just leaving a space because I know I can cut it.
1, 2, 3.
Hey everyone, welcome to the No Sidebar Podcast. I am your host, Brian Gardner, and I'm here to discuss the struggles around being and becoming a creative entrepreneur. Together, we'll identify what's standing in the way of you building and growing your online business. No Sidebar is brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, a complete website solution for writers, designers, podcasters, and other online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. So this week, we're back with Allison Vesterfelt, and we'll be sharing our thoughts on creative block and creative envy, me as a designer and her as a writer. But before we get going, Allie, let's catch up on a few things. It's been a few weeks since you've been on the show, and there's a reason for that. We don't get to talk as much as I'd like to, but again, that's okay because a lot has changed on your end. And so just give us a snapshot of what's happened over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, for the last 5 years, I have been running my own company, doing the entrepreneurial thing, started as freelancing and then grew into, you know, this bigger thing where I had people working for me and with me. And that's been really fun. And then about 6 weeks ago now, I had a writer friend of mine who is also one of my heroes in the writing world. His name's Donald Miller, and he asked me if I wanted to come join his team and be a writer full-time for his team. And the offer was out of left field. I wasn't planning to quit what I was doing and start a full-time job, but it was also such an honor to be asked by him. And I've worked closely enough with him and with his team to know that they are a blast to work with, and they're just a really, really fun team. So I took a few weeks to think about it and finally decided to say yes. And it's been, the last 3 weeks have been the first time in 5 years working a real 9-to-5, show up at work every day, 40 hours a week kind of gig. And it's been a blast. It's been so much fun.
Well, that's really good to hear. I've been talking to Daryl about that, and you and I talked a bit about the decision you made and whatnot. And so it makes me happy to know that you're happy. It also makes me happy to know that you told Don that you had to be part of the show still, and that was part of your deal. So we don't get to miss out on you. So that's a good thing. So another thing that's changed since you've been on last was the idea of going unscripted. Robert and I spent the last 2 weeks cutting my teeth on doing the unscripted thing. And again, that's what we're doing here. I have a few questions and notes, but under no circumstance will I be reading. So you and I have discussed this as well, just doing the conversational riffing thing, because we have a lot in common. And we share a lot of the same mentalities on certain things. And with creative block and creative envy, I think that bodes totally well for us just going back and forth. I also like the idea of going off topic sometimes, because that's where golden nuggets in life get found. When you stick to a script, you have a tendency not to go down places that may, you know, uncover just interesting thoughts and opinions about things. So, all right, so let's talk about creative block. Creative block is this thing that gets in our way of when we want to be creative, right? It's something that keeps us up late at night, times of the day we don't want to even be working, but we have to work and get through it. As a writer, you obviously have it in a different form. For you as a writer, it looks differently than me as a designer. So what are the types of things that you do when you get to a point where you just can't think, you just can't write? And talking about the fact that you have a job now and work for Don, and now that you have a job where you have to write for someone else, there may even be some more pressure that kind of comes along with that. So what do you do, or, you know, how do you get through that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, the one thing I always say about writer's block, because I, in the last 5 years as I've been working with a lot of writers, I have not met a writer yet who hasn't had to deal with writer's block, and it can be one of the most frustrating things you deal with, especially when you depend on your writing for your income. You don't have the option of just saying, oh, I'll just wait until the inspiration comes. You have to sit down and write right now. So the thing I've learned from my own life about writer's block is I always say writer's block is not just writer's block, it's life block. So usually for me, when I sit down and I try to write and I can't write, it's usually because there's something I want to say, need to say, someone I need to talk to, something I'm not admitting to myself, something kind of deeper that I haven't tapped into yet. So the most effective tool for me has been just to step away from the computer and to go for a long walk or a run or to a park or somewhere where I can kind of, you know, get away from all the noise and my phone and my computer and everything that's asking for something from me and just listen to the intuition I have inside of me or follow where that leads me. And almost always that leads me to something that will help me clear the blockage. I think it was like 6 months ago or maybe a year ago now that I was working on a huge project and I was bumping up really close to the deadline and was really worried I wasn't going to finish. And every day for a week, I would sit down at the computer and I would try to get the words out and they wouldn't come out. They wouldn't come out. They wouldn't come out. I was so frustrated. So for a few days in a row, I went on these long walks. And by the third day I did this, I was walking around my neighborhood. And as I was walking, I just was thinking to myself, okay, I've got to figure this out. Like, and I was sort of, you know, saying a little prayer to ask for guidance as to how to get past this blockage. And I heard the words that I heard in that moment were, take care of yourself first and others second. And it was like not an outside voice. It was an inside voice. It was like that little intuition, the conscience or whatever you want to call that inside of you that guides you out of problems. And so I heard those words, came home, sat down at my computer to get some more writing done. And immediately when I sat down, I had, you know, my husband walked in the door. It's like 4:30 in the afternoon. He's like, hey, what are we going to do for dinner tonight? What do you want to do tonight? I got a text message from a friend who said, hey, do you want to hang out tonight? And then I had gotten an email from a client who was really concerned. They needed something ASAP. They needed it right that second. And I just repeated those words to myself, take care of yourself first and others second. And it was like the minute I did that, I realized, okay, said to my husband, hey, we'll talk about this in 1 hour. I just need 1 hour to get some words on the page, and replied to my friend and said, I can't hang out tonight. Let's catch up tomorrow. And then just closed my email and decided that I would respond the next morning, you know, during business hours. And then in the next 60 minutes, I got more writing done in that 60 minutes than I had in the whole day. I think sometimes it's something like that, that there was something going on inside of me that I couldn't quite put my finger on or couldn't explain. But once I went on the walk and cleared my head and heard those words, it guided me out of the problem, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen the movie The Social Network?
Yes.
You know that scene when Justin Timberlake comes to the house for the first time when they've moved to San Francisco and they're walking around and introducing people and he goes up to this one guy and he's like, hey, and he's like, no, don't talk to him. He's wired in.
Oh, yeah.
It's like kind of, it's a visual I got when you were talking about that, when you had that moment where, hey, I got to work and, you know, Daryl coming home and kind of giving him the, my headphones are on, I'm wired in. And,
exactly.
And it's funny though, because I'm the opposite of you, even though I know I should do what you just said. And I even wrote about this last week on my blog, just about the idea of kind of internet addiction and just feeling like you always have to be online. And for me, when I get creative block, I have this mentality of I have to stay on the internet. I have to keep trying to beat down the door or put my head through the wall to get it to work. Once in a while, I actually do, as you say, which is just turn off the computer, go for a walk, go on a run, go do something totally brainless. And I'll come back and feel, you know, inspired or, oh my gosh, there it is. Now I can clear through this. I don't know why I was being so stubborn before. And it's good words. And it's counterintuitive, though, to step away to make progress. I guess it's like a one step back, two steps forward mentality, which is hard to think it will happen. But, you know, as you said, and as I've experienced a few times, you know, it really is a good thing.
Do you think there is a difference in approach? Because I mean, I don't know if you would call yourself an extrovert. I would consider you an extrovert and me an introvert. Do you think that maybe for some people to clear a creative block, it might help them to go to people? Or do you think it always is about getting alone?
I think the cure for creative block looks a lot of different ways depending on symptoms and whatnot. I think even with you or with me, in some block, it may help to talk to people. And in some block, it may help to just go for a run. Although, as I was kind of thinking about what we were going to talk today, I don't want to mistake creative block for being sidetracked online. In other words, I'll say, oh, I got creative block, when in reality, it means I'm hanging out on Twitter and doing things that are actually just disruptive, and it's really not creative block. And so, like, I'll blame other people and be like, oh, I'm having creative block because I keep getting pinged on Skype from people. And it's like, hello, just turn off Skype, close down social media, and then focus. Because that's really, you know, I think for me, a lot of times, that's all it might be. I don't even need to go on a run. I just need to tune out the stuff that's distracting. So I think like one of the take-home messages here is don't mistake creative block for just being distracted. And that's a whole other show, a whole other episode and stuff we've even talked about on the blog over at nosidebar.com is just how to tune out those things. Email is another example of, you know, something that gets in our way. But
this was kind of in connection to what you just said. I was thinking about how, and maybe this is too much of a rabbit trail, but about how there's such an expectation for us to be available via email, Twitter, Facebook. It's like if I tweet something, I feel like maybe this is an imagined expectation, but I feel like if I tweet something and people respond to me, then I actually am required to respond to them. And same thing, if I send an email or somebody emails me, I'm required to respond to that email. If I don't have my phone for a few hours and somebody text messages me and I don't text them back for 4 or 5 hours, I feel like a weight or a sense of guilt. And I sometimes feel like that is part of the blockage. And what I have to do to clear that blockage is just turn everything off.
I think I need to realize that other people are more patient than I might be. So in other words, if I don't respond right away, whether it be on social media or email, you know, my guess is they're not sitting there tapping their fingers and saying, all right, when's he going to respond? And so I think what you just talked about and what those who go through that, which I do at times, I think what it is it's just our own thing that we feel that really isn't happening. You know what I mean?
Right. Like an imagined pressure.
Exactly.
I do think last year around this time, I went away for a week to this retreat center where you check in your phone when you get there and you're there for 7 days and you do, you know, meditations and different kinds of things to, it's called the Living Centered program, but a lot of artists and musicians and writers and stuff go there to kind of get back that creative energy they feel like they've lost. And living 7 days without my phone was, it felt like something physically changed in my body. And the other thing it reminded me of is that, oh my gosh, the world goes on without me, you know? Like, I didn't talk to my husband for 7 days. I didn't talk to my family for 7 days. Everybody kind of knew. I mean, I had told people ahead of time, I'm going to be unplugged for 7 days. So I didn't check my email for 7 days. I didn't get on Twitter for 7 days. I didn't look at anything for 7 days. And I think I get into this mode. It's like a hyper productive or hyper kind of like, okay, move, move, move. Got to get everything done. Everything responded to. That kind of mode. And to unplug and shut everything down for 7 days was so life-changing. And it just made me realize, oh my gosh, okay, world moves on without me. Nobody needs me that badly that if I don't respond to them for 1 week that the world will fall apart, you know? So it was just this sense of relief that there's more space than I think there is.
I don't know if I could do that. For me, it might be life-ending. And I don't know that I could go 7 minutes without being connected to some sort of online something. I do absolutely commend you for doing that. And I do totally understand that. I'm sure it's 100% positive and awesome and all of that. And I would probably have to go kicking and screaming and stuff like that. But back to the email and the response thing, and then we can head towards this creative envy thing. You know, I think, and I get down on myself sometimes for being such a responder, that I think I set up the expectation that I will respond all the time and respond quickly. Oh, if Brian hasn't responded within 20 minutes, there's something must be wrong, you know, because Brian always responds to me in 20 minutes. And so I'm trying to actually train myself in taking a little bit more time, as much as I hate it, because it means more email sitting there, you know, 6 hours go by, which is more expected behavior anyways, because most people do take that amount of time, if not longer, to respond. And so there is like a bittersweetness to clearing out the inbox and letting it sit. Because as soon as you respond to something, if someone's right there, they respond right back, and then you've got even more work to do. So sometimes I'm like, if I just let it sit there, then it won't keep coming in.
You are much better at responding than I am. You're so fast.
You know, every time I text you, if I don't hear back from you in 10 minutes, I think, uh-oh, something's wrong.
Allie's not even my friend anymore.
Yeah, like I thought we were close. All right, creative envy. Creative block stinks, but creative envy can be crippling, and creative envy can be something that totally weighs us down and totally can go to bad places. You know, so in moderation, creative envy is good, right? Because it motivates us, it keeps us on track, and inspires us to do good things. There's nothing wrong with having an inspirational person in your life, or people for that matter. I think Robert and I talked about it a little bit, either last show or the show before, where you kind of get into that area where it becomes resentment, and that's a really bad place to be, because nothing good comes out of, you know, negativity or feelings of, you know, oh, I so wish I was that person. You know, I right. brought up the whole Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding thing. That obviously was performance envy, but who are the people, who are the writers, and you're not throwing anyone under the bus here, who are the people in your life that you use as inspiration that may or may not borderline envy? You know, like the people who you're like, oh, I just really wish I could do that.
Anne Lamott is the first one that comes to mind. And John Steinbeck. I mean, I just finished reading a few months ago his book called Journal of a Novel, which is he wrote as he was writing East of Eden, which is probably my all-time favorite book. And he said something in there that shocked me. He said, as I'm writing this book, I'm reminding myself that even if nobody ever reads it, it will be worth it to have written it. And I just thought, like, that is so cool to know that John Steinbeck, who has written books that, you know, are in the canon and that kids read in high school, you know, it's required reading in high school, thought that to himself as he's writing, because it just made me remember, like, hey, we're all human. We're all just kind of trying to make this thing work. But yeah, I definitely have at moments thought about something Anne Lamott has written, or reading something in East of Eden, or even Donald Miller, you know, thought to myself, dang it, why didn't I think of that? Or that's exactly what I wanted to say. And you just said it so much better than I could have ever said it. It's not fair, you know?
I have the same thing. I mean, as much as I do from a design side, even from a writing side, I love to write, but I don't write as much and often as I wish I could, primarily because I'm doing other things like podcasting and designing and stuff like that, but also because I don't think I measure up at times. I could sit around and try to craft the perfect tweet, but I would spend three hours doing it. And, you know, I get mad at people who it just rolls off their tongue, and, you know, or I'll go to people's Twitter streams and I'll just for fun, you know, just, you know, scroll through their last, I don't know, couple hundred tweets just to see what they write. And there's people who are like one after another, just fun, witty tweets that have been, you know, favorited or retweeted. And I'm like, I just wish I could be as witty, because there's a part of me that wants to live that out in life. I don't want to just be this safe, normal, happy guy. I want to write things that make people respond. And, you know, there's people on Twitter, Anna Kendrick, again, here I bring her up. She's classic for being very unfiltered with her tweets. But some of the stuff she writes, it's so funny and gets such a response. And a lot of it is so true. And a lot of it is what we wish we could say but can't. And so I have Twitter envy for people like her. God, I wish I could just copy her tweet and then just tweet it. Not that anybody would respond to, you know, it coming from me, but I don't know. It's the one thing I'm most aware of when I go to design, is to make sure that when I find inspiration, I don't know. So there's designers out there for me that Bill Kenny from Focus Lab, he's a person who I admire heavily, and it gets almost very close to that envy, because it's not a negative thing I feel towards Bill, but it's just he's so good at what he does there at Focus Lab that I wish I could just perform half as much as, you know, he can. And you know, I think it's okay to have that in our life, you know, in any area of our life.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, especially when it comes to imitation, my thoughts are that imitation is a really, really important part of the development process for any creative. At least when I work with writers, I guess I can only really speak for this part of it, but when I work with writers, I always say, imitation of other writers is the only way you become a good writer. But the thing I explain to them is that imitation happens in a different part of your brain than creativity. So you have to intentionally set aside time for practice with your writing and then actual performance of your writing. So for example, like I would say, sit down for an hour and you want to use the creative part of your brain, the creative engine inside of you, to write what's inside of you. And you'll spend an hour doing that. And then you want a separate time where you sit down for an hour and you use the other part of your brain, the more analytical, strategic part of your brain, to go through your writing and say, here's what's working, here's what's not working, here are my spelling errors. If I move this paragraph to the top, it's going to be more effective. Who's my reader? Who am I writing to? What do I want to say to them? What do I want them to know by the end of this piece? And it's that other part of your brain, the creative analytical part of your brain, that looks at another writer like Anne Lamott or Donald Miller or John Steinbeck and says, what are they doing? What are the techniques they're using that are really, really effective? And how can I mimic those techniques to make myself a more effective writer? But then the challenge is turning off that part of your brain when you sit down to write again and saying, okay, now that I've learned all that I, you know, over here, I've spent some time learning and analyzing, I'm going to turn off that part of my brain and turn on the other part of my brain and let the creative engine just flow again. And the idea would be that when you move back and forth, each time you move back into that creative brain, you actually become a better writer, and it's still coming through your voice and through your filter and sounding more and more like you. I would say the challenge is that creative envy actually blocks your ability to think objectively about what other writers are doing. Because creative envy says that writer, she was just born with that ability. She must just have a special gift that I don't have. I'll never be like her. I wish I could be like her, but the only way for me to be like her is just to copy her. Whereas our more objective analytical brain says, oh, wow, she's using this really effective technique where she, instead of saying she was angry, she actually describes to me what anger looks like. And that it works. It brings me into the scene. It makes me feel what she was feeling.
Maybe that's what I'm doing wrong. You say, write for an hour, take some time, come back for an hour, and to alternate the different types of your brain. I try to do that within the same minutes. Like, I'll write a sentence creatively, and then I'll go back and say, okay, now let's analyze this sentence. And that obviously becomes very inefficient, because I don't think the brain really works well when you're going back and forth that often.
It's actually, I think, the biggest mistake writers make. I always tell my writers I work with, write now and edit later. Right now, edit later. Tell yourself that while you're writing. Right now, edit later. Right now, edit later. Don't edit while you're writing, or you're writing, it won't flow. It won't have a flow to it.
So this is the No Sidebar podcast, Creative Block and Creative Envy, in which Brian Gardner, the host, takes notes from his co-host. See, that's one of the favorite things, aside from just loving you as a person. I love having you and having access to such brilliant information from the writing side, because you're so technically trained and so good at what you do that even through osmosis, I get to pick up some of these things. And so if anything, the reason for this show was for me to hear just what you said.
Well, I feel the same way about you. I think every friendship is a win when both people in the friendship feel like they're the luckiest one in the friendship. So.
Well, I appreciate that from you as a friend and as a colleague, in a sense. You know, the one thing being colleagues, the one thing that we get to do is this podcast together, and we still are doing the nosidebar.com website, which, as Robert and I discussed a couple weeks ago, we'll start to go through a few subtle changes in direction. Nothing major, as I've talked about before, but the intentionality of really focusing and addressing the content from the podcast side as well as the site towards creative entrepreneurs. Because after all, that's what you are. That's what I am. And so writers and podcasters and designers and kind of anyone in the online space there who dabbles or immerses themselves creatively, those are the types of people who I resonate with, who I think you resonate with, and our company, Copyblogger, as a whole resonates with. A lot of the stuff moving forward will be kind of specifically towards that audience. And I'm really excited about the stuff that we're going to be doing on the show, really excited about some of the stuff we'll be doing on the website with more content, a slight design update, which if anyone follows me outside of this, they know that redesigning is definitely my forte.
I'm really excited too. Thanks so much for including me in this. This is so fun.
All right, so group hugs for everybody, right? Love it. If you like what you're hearing here on the podcast, the best way to support the show is to leave a rating and or a comment over on iTunes. Want more? Check out nosidebar.com and sign up for our newsletter. Each week, we curate the very best and most interesting articles when it comes to designing a simple life. At work, at home, and in the soul. Until next week, this has been Brian Gardner and Allison Vesterfeld.